thank you so much for listening to another episode of CX Chronicles Podcast. I'm your host, Adrian Brady Chisana. Tune in each week as we listen to amazing customer-focused business leaders from across the world sharing their personal stories about their teams, tools, process, and feedback. Check us out at cxchronicles.com today or listen on iTunes, Spotify, and Stitcher. Hey folks, Happy New Year's from CX Chronicles. Thanks so much as always for listening to the podcast and for tuning in each week to listen to amazing customer-focused business leaders from across the world. I'd love to just take a quick minute to let all of you know, please take a minute to stop by your favorite podcast player and leave the CX Chronicles podcast a review, letting other folks know why you love the show. It's super, super helpful for helping us find new listeners and for letting others know about all the fun that we have each week here. Do not hesitate to reach out for any of my friends that are building their businesses and building their teams and building their customer portfolio base. Do not hesitate to reach out to CX Chronicles if you need help getting ready for all that 2021 is going to bring, and you're looking for some additional help on the CX managed services side to help run your business and manage your customers into the future. Thanks so much, folks. All right, guys, super excited for today's show. We have Nicole Garberg joining us on the show from Engine. Nicole, welcome to the CX Chronicles podcast.
Thank you, Adrian. It's great to be here.
Absolutely. So, guys, super excited for today's show. Nicole has a ton of awesome experience working with customers, working with teams. She's been in a number of different businesses and different industries. Nicole, why don't you start off today's show? Take a couple minutes to talk the CX Nation through your elevator pitch and give us a sense for how you got to where you are today as the Vice President of Customer Experience at Engine.
Absolutely. So, Adrian, I am a lifelong student of human behavior. I'm just fascinated by the ways that people interact with each other and also like to be in a business setting. And I found a way that that can translate and those two things can marry together. And when I help companies interact with their customers in a better way and study that behavior as well. So that's the short version of how I got into customer experience. But a little bit more detail, I was able to work in customer service answering phone calls from happy and not so happy customers for a catalog company that specialized in refurbished products. So you might expect that more of those customers were a little unhappy. And then I got to see the flip side of that working for a luxury bedding manufacturer where they had a really great product, really great customer experience, and, you know, really pretty easy questions when you're answering hundreds of phone calls in a shift. So those two jobs really set the stage and helped me develop deep insight into customer pain and pain points and points of delight, and just how to navigate conversations with those customers when they're in a state of crisis or, you know, in a state of delight. Mediation and conflict resolution were definitely things that I picked up along the way there and have proven invaluable through all the stages I've gone through in my career. So not only personally loving studying human behavior, I also really have a fondness for research and having the ability to ask a question that doesn't have an answer yet and design a study that gets an answer to that question and that I can support with data and other facts from others' research in the field is another passion of mine. So with those customer experience jobs behind me, I packed up and went to school. I have a graduate degree in experimental psychology, and that really led me to say I'm going to either teach or work in market research, and I chose market research. So once I got into the working professional industry, I started in healthcare in a syndicated shop of sorts where we did market sizing for all health insurance providers in the U.S. and learned some invaluable skills about getting data together and really testing the quality and authenticity of numbers, because a lot of what we did there was to help large health insurance providers choose if they could acquire another plan and still stay within monopoly rules and things of that nature. So quality and attention to detail was very important there. I went on to be more of the consultant role in market research when I joined a Blues plan in Minnesota. And there I was able to consult throughout the entire organization and be the voice of our members to pretty much every area of the business possible. And that was just a great experience, being able to be an advocate and a translator for people in the organization and the members outside and really impacting their lives. I took that onto pharmaceutical work and some med device, where I did not only consulting, but patient experience, patient reported outcome work in healthcare economics research. So what that was able to do is to allow pharmaceutical companies to see the efficacy of their therapies with actual patient responses. So really directly impacting quality of life for individuals. And since those days, I've been recently in the supplier side of research and helping clients across a diverse set of industries, not only within healthcare, but I've branched out into financial services, automotive, retail and consumer goods. You name it, we cover it. Everybody has a customer and we're here to be their advocate. So I've turned into my focus to modernize CX programs and help businesses return their CX practices to affecting their own outcomes, so that they're not only improving their customers' experience, but they're improving their business quality and bottom line as well. And we do that through advancing customer experience maturity, or CX maturity, and a customer-centric culture.
That's awesome. I mean, so first things first, Nicole, just an awesome background, awesome experience. Couple follow-on questions right off the bat. So I love asking people how they actually get into this world, and how do they get into the whole, you know, customer experience, customer service, customer success type of focus. And for you, experimental psychology, that the psychology piece that jumps off. So you were already kind of thinking about what makes people tick, what drives people, how do they think, what drives maybe even the science around why they think the way that they do. So you had a pretty big, you had a pretty nice start with having the psychology background in your education, and then you layered on all this awesome experience working across a number of different industries. Makes pretty good sense to me as to why you're doing what you're doing today.
Absolutely. A lot of years of study, and I try and squeeze every ounce of that knowledge out of it, out of my studies, as well as personal life experiences. And really, you know, nothing prepares you like being in the trenches with different clients. But, you know, the one key takeaway of across all of the work that I do is really, you know, people just wanted to be treated the way that they would treat others. And, yep. You know, back to what we learned in kindergarten and the golden rule is really a valuable just grounding level. Just treat people with empathy and kindness, and it will come back to you in tenfold.
Big time. And you know, Nicole, as you and I were talking about the other day too, especially now, right, with with what the world has been dealing with this past year, and with all the ups and the downs, you know, the consumers and most markets are really, really going to expect that level of attention to their experiences and to their service, because that's where their spend's going to go. I think that, you know, there's a number of different companies out there that have been very lucky to kind of not have to worry about it, right? Many commodity-based businesses and things like that. But as you and I were kind of talking about the other day leading up to the show, it's like, this is important now. You know, companies investing in their customer experience, investing in their employee experience, understanding the ebbs and the flows of what makes a business and a team tick, it's going to be more important than ever before.
Absolutely. And really, they're hypersensitive to that empathy, and businesses appreciating that, and how they treat their employees as well. So, you know, I do a lot of work with retail businesses that have employees in person, customers in person still. And we talk about what's a good way to start your day. And it's a team huddle. It's, you know, acknowledging that your employees are facing unknown experiences on the floor, things that they haven't worked through before, and you can come together and really work to find solutions and give each other suggestions before you go out there. Or, you know, it may just be, I need a moment to just take a break, and who can cover for me, and having those plans in place so that there's not panic or frustration during the shift, because those stress points that are always needling at us and, you know, taking up that mental space, they come out in the way that we treat our customers. So if I am already stressed out, I have less patience to deal with someone who also might be coming to me at a point of frustration because they can't find an item that they desperately need, and we just don't have it on the shelf. And maybe we have it in the back room, and the way that I could handle that would be to say, let me go and look for you, and go that extra step. You know, if I don't have the mental capacity there, or I'm too stressed out, I might just say, yeah, we don't have any.
Yep.
When that could be the wrong answer. And, you know, that can hurt the brand. It can hurt the trust about going to that retail location to get what I need. And everybody leaves feeling not the best,
absolutely.
The best outcome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Every one of us can think of an example, maybe a little bit harder now with how these last 6 months have gone, because we're maybe not doing as much of the shopping and of the dining out and things that we've done in the past. But every one of us can draw up an example in our heads of a time when you've basically encountered a frazzled staff member, and maybe it's a restaurant, maybe it's a retail location, maybe it's a business that you're going in to pick up the laundry. And you're right, when you can sense as a customer when the employee on the other side of the counter is stressed, frazzled, overwhelmed, overworked. I know for me, you know, having been a part of building many, many companies over the years, I immediately think about, man, they're overworked, or there's not enough resources. Like I can't help thinking, man, they should have another person helping this person. So you're right. Like taking the time to think about how you can balance all that. And especially now, Nicole, you're spot on with like your morning huddles. Like you don't have the same pod time that you had 6 months ago where you get to, maybe you get into the office, grab your coffee, sit down, and you've got your pod or your team around you kind of cranking up the day, or sort of poking on what are the big items of the day, or poking on, or even just to tap someone's shoulder and say, hey, how do we do that one process? Or, hey, I got this customer with XYZ problem. What do we do again? And we don't have that now. So like taking the time, thinking about how you can connect, even if it's remotely, or even if it's, mm-hmm. you know, by the telephone, super, super important.
Absolutely. And to prepare your team with ways that you can reach out, because you don't have the water cooler conversation that you can just say, hey, I'm having this issue. You know, a lot of things happen in the lunchroom. You'll find you can solve a lot of problems just, you know, spitballing with somebody that you run into in the hallway. And now it's a little bit more of an effort to say, oh, I could Slack them, or I could instant message, or, you know, maybe I can schedule a call. But, you know, those in the moment, I think we're missing a lot of, you know, quick turn, satisfactory experiences as employees with this environment, because you're a little bit more on an island, a little bit more isolated, and you have to do a little bit more work to get those interactions. So, you know, impromptu calls to coworkers might actually be welcomed just to break up the day. So a nice way to check in on your friends and colleagues.
It's spot on. It's almost as if like in our former physical type of working environment, those collisions that you were speaking of, they would happen every day. You bump in, mm-hmm. maybe you work in sales and you're walking to the water cooler and you bump into your buddy in ops. And mm-hmm. then you guys can literally talk about, hey, what about those top three things? Or so you're right. So you really have to take the time today more than ever to think about how you strategically build those different collisions into the day-to-day. Think about how you could schedule them. Think about which mediums you want. So all awesome stuff. Nicole, I'd love to jump into the first of the four CX pillars. Let's spend some time talking about team. I'd love for you to spend a couple minutes telling the CX Nation about the team over at Engine, and give us a sense for how you guys are built. What are your major focus areas? Give us a sense for what the team looks like at Engine today.
Absolutely. So I really like the setup that we have at Engine. We, as a market research supplier, we have a lot of methodological, statistical analysis, you know, really specific skill sets that you need to have. And that's kind of seen as an execution and analytics piece of the team. And so they are functional experts on all things that gets the project done, cranks out the quality results, and knows, you know, what to put in place to get to that answer when we ask the questions that we're trying to get at. And then we have our business advisory team, which is made up of industry and subject matter experts. So not only do we have the really strong research mindset with our execution leaders and our panel providers and in relationships like that, we have folks who have worked in healthcare, folks who have worked in the financial services industry, technology, retail, business to business is another subject matter expertise, automotive and travel. So we have each of those basic industry segments covered by a leading expert who's worked in the field for a number of years, at least 20, I think, in each case of our industry leaders. And then CX is the practice area that I lead. We also have expertise in brand, and our UK team works a lot with employee research. So really, you know, jack of all trades, master of none is not our way of focus here. We are very focused on, you know, your area and you know it well, and we are very collaborative. So, you know, if I'm working with a business to business relationship doing the customer experience there. I'm calling my colleague, Linda Shea, and we're going together and collaborating, and we're pulling in our top minds from the analytics team and the execution who have the expertise and experience to get that done in the most efficient, cost-effective way for our clients.
That's awesome. So that sounds like, number one, you've got a fully formed team. I love what you're talking about in terms of having not only subject matter experts, but subject matter experts that come with decades of experience, because that really, really, truly does help when you have individuals that really just intimately know the industry from top to bottom. That's such a big, big help. The other piece is, I hearing you talk about some of the different areas, with your team, with CX, do you get to play in all of those different industries and in all of those different teams that you just talked with us about?
I do. The really nice part about CX is that everybody has a customer. So the way that your relationship looks may be a little bit different within each of the industries, but I do get to play across all of those. And, with my experimental psychology background, I dabble in the analytics piece too. So nice. I know enough to ask some questions that get an eyebrow once in a while. So
I
that's
like
always
that.
Fun.
You're going to have to, Nicole, you're going to have to be careful after your teammates here at Engine listen to this. They're going to answer your questions a lot differently.
Right.
That's awesome. Let's move on to the second C's pillar of tools. So you got all these different industries, you have all these different teams focused on sort of covering different parts of the pitch. Can you spend some time talking about the toolkit that you've built out at Engine, but also, you just made it clear, Nicole, with what, and this is one of my favorite parts of CX, by the way. I love what you just said, where we get our tentacles into almost every area of the business. Sometimes whether we like it or not, but can you spend some time talking about the tools and the systems that drives Engine today and how you're able to really kind of manage all of your different customer relationships in a really high quality type of way?
Sure. So, in terms of CX and tools, a lot of what's going on in the industry right now is supported by technology. And the tools that we think of most often are the big software as a service providers. So at Engine, we do have relationships with those providers, and we're able to, take the information that we're getting from the projects that we're running and put that onto a dashboard or a platform. And that really allows us to communicate in real time with our clients their results. So, it used to be back in the day that you would have to wait, your quarter would end, and it would take about a month for data to be tabulated, results to be reported on, PowerPoint charts to be built. But the technology is so helpful and so efficient that we get the data in, we clean it. In certain transactional studies that we do, it's real time. So it comes in, and within an hour of that response being recorded on our system, it's up on the dashboard for our clients to view. And that really, it's an invaluable tool, because we talk a lot about managing expectations and experiences in the moment in real time. So if you were to get a disgruntled employee a disgruntled customer coming in to a research study and saying, I just had this really horrible experience, you have the opportunity to follow up with that customer and apologize and remedy that. And, we can take that back out to the floor and talk about it in a huddle at the next meeting, really showing those customers that you care, back to the empathy part, and even more now in the current time. So I think those tools are really helpful for us. Internally, we use a lot of communication tools, within colleagues. We have Slack, and that's invaluable. It's easy to just ping somebody really quick. Like we said, it's not the water cooler, it's not the lunchroom, but you can Slack someone, and as long as they're not in a meeting, they're likely to get back to you, and we use that a lot.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, Slack has been, I think, one of the tools that so many folks that have been on the show, and then just people that, Nicole, you and I were talking about this the other day, but like, this has become a huge tool. You're right, because it becomes your work messaging, right? It's taken over as the one of the leading work messaging tools out there. But there's so much that you can do with it. The other thing too, we've had a number of different folks come on the show talking about all the ways that they've leveraged different integration solutions with Slack. So a number of people have hooked up Slack with Zendesk or with Salesforce or with whatever CRM they're using. They can catalog conversations. They can tie conversations back to accounts. So it's really been awesome to see over these last 6 months. I think actually we had an individual from Slack on the show a few months back, and they have been just exploding, right? They've been like, so many folks are coming on board, signing up if they didn't already have the tool, because it's really an excellent way for our remote teams to be able to chat with each other. But again, the other thought too is just, it's amazing what it can do. There's so many different integration possibilities, and it's really, I think, going to be interesting to see how companies continue to leverage what you can do with a tool like Slack.
Absolutely. It's really easy to do document sharing and download pictures and things like that. You don't have to worry about finding a file in your throughout whatever drive it's on, and then attaching it to the email, and then it find out it's too large. So it's just, it makes life a little bit easier to get through the day and to share.
Big time. Yep. Yeah. One last question on tools, Nicole. So across the different industries, does Engine have any needs where they have to use different tools for different industries just due to industry expectations? Or do you find that some of the tool and the tech stack that you've been able to build out at Engine, it primarily fits all of the different industries and all the different customer sets?
You know, I think everybody has their idea of what level of customization is needed. And so there's never really that big of a rah-rah, yes, let's take something that's right out of the box. What I like about the tools that we have and the fact that we work with many software as a service providers is that you can select the right one that's, you know, malleable enough to satisfy the needs. And in some cases, you just know that one provider has too much rigidity around a specific client need, whereas another one would be better. Text analytics capabilities is one of those that stands out. You know, you have need to download after the fact comments with codes attached to them. Some providers are able to do that. Others aren't. They're more of a in the real time, in the moment. You should be looking at this kind of in a constant state and not a post quarter type of research look. So we take those considerations into account. We do a lot of in-depth interviewing with the clients when we're going to partner to build something with them or to use that type of a platform. You know, there always is the case where you need to customize beyond what an out-of-the-box will offer. And, you know, there's workarounds, and we get creative. Our operations folks are really skilled in knitting things together so that we can make it happen for them. And sometimes, you know, it's behind the scenes, and we create things that work within, or you get a plug-in from somewhere else. And that's another thing I really like about the teams here at Engine. They see a challenge that someone might just shut down at, and we say, no, we can figure that out. Let's talk to these, you know, three other providers out there that are doing some cool and innovative things and see how we can partner. And we're always willing to take on a new and innovative thought to, you know, really get better breadth of data collection capabilities and results presentations for our clients so that we work within what they need and not just come to them with the platform won't do that. That is never an answer we want to be able to say. No. So we look for workarounds.
I love it. Yep. Highly flexible, kind of always adaptable, working with what's sort of coming at you. Definitely part of building, running, and managing a business and a customer base in today's world, to say the least. Mm-hmm. Nicole, I'd love to move into the third CX pillar of process and workflows. I'd love for you to spend a couple minutes talking about how you and your team, how have you gone about thinking about how you want to either build or optimize or iterate on some of the existing processes and workflows that you have on the day-to-day? Mm-hmm. And then can you spend some time talking about some of the tools or some of the ways that you've actually gone about kind of stitching all of these processes and workflows together as Engine has grown and as you've taken on more and more customers?
Yeah, so the first step in, you know, really building a process is to understand what's working well and where there's some hiccups. I think, you know, getting people in a room and talking through that so everybody has their voice heard and lots of papers hang up on the walls and write that down, you know, is the best first step for me, just to get the lay of the land. And then the next is to really brainstorm the solutions and gather input from the stakeholders of the processes that are in place. So where can you realistically make a change, and what does that look like? Because, you know, the people ideating in a room don't necessarily carry out each stage of that new process. So we want to make sure that the folks that will be living it day to day are given a chance to be able to put in their input as well. But then you really need to get a stake in the ground and develop a draft or a process that you can know that it's going to be under revision, but you have an initial solution. and activating that process and workflow. It needs to be flexible. It needs to be fluid. And there has to be a feedback loop. So just like when we deal with customers, this is kind of your customers as the person leading the process revision or creation needs to get input on a constant feedback loop so that we can make adjustments and be in real time.
Yep. Yep. No, yeah. that makes perfect sense. One follow-up is, mm-hmm. are there, so for what have you found to be the most helpful? Have you found living place? So you mentioned getting the team involved. Totally agree. I think that's one of the first places to start. They typically know these processes and these workflows. They know every click, every scroll, every little part of the tool. What's worked best? Have you used living playbooks? Have you used actual playbook style software? What have you kind of done to sort of get the team to be able to take all these awesome ideas, awesome learnings, awesome findings, the stuff that they're living, breathing, and hearing every single day from customers? What have you seen kind of be like one of the best tricks to sort of capture all that information? I think a lot of companies have a hard time capturing it. What have you seen work really well in terms of putting it in one place where people can either add to it or minimally, let's say it's a brand new person on the team, they can go to that playbook and they can start there?
Yeah. So really identifying who owns a process and who's involved. So for me, it's all about the people aspect of it. Making sure that everyone in the organization, like every level of the organization is represented, and that for each step of the way, we have in a way a game plan, a playbook that is the steps, the tasks within it. So thinking of, you know, office project management software, this is your header, and then there's these five tasks that are falling under it. And you really do have next to it who's responsible for this, the idea, at least your, you know, brainstorm of how long this is going to take to get put in place, and then what things are contingent upon it. So I really like project management software because it trickles down, right? So if you hit a roadblock with one effort, they're automatically connected to the efforts that follow. And if you are off by a week, everything is off by a week. And then you can set it to color coordinate to, you know, flash red at you basically to say, this is, you're not going to meet your deadline if this doesn't get adjusted. And so having a person who runs the entire project to see those things, plus the individual teams that own different parts of the work stream, that's my preferred way to attack the process and workflow.
Love it. I think that's super helpful. And I think that is, depending on what your business looks like or what your team looks like, any type of playbook or any type of game plan, as you mentioned, Nicole, it's the starting point, right? Having mm-hmm. that is essentially as a map and a guide for how your team and your customers are really going to move into the future. So awesome stuff there. Mm-hmm. I'd love to jump into the fourth and final pillar of feedback. This is my favorite one. Why don't you take a little bit of time, Nicole, talk with the CX Nation about, number one, how does Engine think about collecting and using feedback from its customers? And then after we get through that, I'd love for you to also feel free to talk about some of the ways that they collect and use and follow up with their employee feedback as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So we collect customer feedback, our client feedback, from qualitative or quantitative structured surveys. So, you know, a quarterly business review, where we'll visit in the past, now call and say, you know, how are we doing? How is this relationship going? It's a two-way street, which I really appreciate. We ask the clients how we're doing for them. And we also talk about ways that our partnership could be improved on their end. If we have, you know, some response delay time and things like that, we talk about that openly. So it's a two-way street.
I like that.
Yeah. And then also, you know, informal reach outs, if something happens on a status call and things get a little heated or something went really well, you know, the project manager or one of the leads will, you know, call off to the side and contact that client or send an email and just say, hey, that was a great conversation. Let's do XYZ. So there's some intimate connections, but also the entire team gets to hear the feedback so that they can learn in the same moment. And then we do a lot with debriefs. So we use that feedback. We talk about it. How could we have done this differently? That went really well. Let's tell the rest of the organization what we did and how we pivoted and the success we had with that so they can learn from that and bring it to their clients as well. So there's a lot of sharing, both positive and improvement oriented, and that's really helpful. And then, you know, the employee piece of it, we Engine is very good about asking employees how they're feeling, especially in this time. A lot of efforts devoted to employee mental well-being and workload and just resource needs. Do you need us to provide you with equipment, physical equipment to do your job better, resources, training, those kind of things? There's a lot of proactive outreach from management and the executive leadership team just to keep everybody on board. A lot of transparency, which I think is helpful, especially in times of uncertainty. If you know and can trust that your organization is being forthcoming with the information as they get it. Everybody's in the same situation where nobody really predicts the future, but at least it's nice to know what we know today is being shared holistically with each employee.
Yeah, big time. I think this is one of those times when customer feedback has always been really important, and the world's leading companies have always been excellent at understanding how to collect, how to measure, how to assess, how to follow up, and then how to essentially iterate on that feedback. I think that employee experience and this whole notion of, I've been seeing things in some of the CX camps talking about, the whole world of EX or voice of employee, right? It's expanding. It's getting way, way more popular. And I think that you just nailed it, Nicole. Right now, we've got everyone's working in a different type of way. Many companies absolutely had to make adjustments, as you just mentioned. So a lot of people are doing a little bit more work, right? There's 22 million people in America lost their jobs. And the companies that are taking the time to check in with their employees, see how they're doing. I've seen all these awesome stories of companies that are thinking about creative ways of, none of us have been able to have a lunch together in the office for like 6 months. So like there's companies that are sending their employees lunch, or there's companies that are sending their employees dinner, like through Grubhub or something like that. I think that's awesome. And I think it's one of those things where it's like, just making an attempt, right? Make an attempt, show that your employees that you care, show that your employees that you're listening. And then, it's the age old, right? Happy employees are going to create even happier customers, and companies that understand that are going to be, I think, well positioned for the future.
Absolutely. Employees that feel valued, value the relationships with the customers and enjoy their work. And it shows. It definitely is fed back through that experience. And, ultimately it's like planting a seed and watering it and giving it the right kind of soil and nutrients so that your company is able to grow, your company is able to do well. It just definitely does permeate. And we do a lot of work with employee engagement, employee experience, and customer experience, and merging the feedback from both channels. So, it's very powerful to take to an executive team at a client organization and say, we asked your customers about this. We also asked your employees what they think. And I've had lots of experience where we do that, we merge it together. And because we asked the front lines the same questions as we asked the customers, we also asked the front lines what they would do to improve it. And our action planning is so much more robust and so much more efficient to get in place, because the employees have been thinking about this for a lot longer than maybe the executives even knew it was an issue.
They live it and breathe it every day. Yeah.
So, right. So you come and they're like, yeah, we've known about that for 3 months. So here's what we would do. And you're like, okay, absolutely. Yep. And I've seen staffing changes, training happen, a complete restructure of staffing based on volume happen because of employee feedback at an organization to address a customer pain point and their revenue. We were monitoring that at the same time, and we watched their revenue and their customer experience increase over just a month's time with that change put in place, which was an employee suggestion because we asked.
That's awesome. And the other thing that you just made me think about is like companies take the time to think about how you are measuring or thinking about how you can begin to calculate your CX ROI, your EX ROI, your UX ROI. Because you're right. These are all things that they make a huge difference to the bottom line, period, right? Companies that know how to slice and dice and invest in the right places, they watch their businesses, they watch their sales explode, they watch their number of customers explode, they see a healthier business. And you're spot on, Nicole. It's more fun to be a part of a company like that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, look, Nicole, this has been absolutely fantastic. Before we wind down today's episode, I'd love to make sure I give you a chance. Anything that you want to feature, highlight, or call out for all the awesome things that you and your teammates at Engine are working on? And then also, where can folks find you?
Yeah, absolutely. So folks can find me on LinkedIn, Nicole Garberg. Can find me through the Engine website, Engine Insights. We're doing a lot of great stuff. What my focus is really on is connecting customer experience to business outcomes. Again, we want to make the customer's experience better. We also want your business to do well. And really what's happened, as I've seen in my experience in customer service and customer experience research, is that when we have key performance indicators or those, you know, that metric, that goal that we're trying to set, people get fixated on a score or a number. And it's easy to say, my goal is to change that score, that number, by X points or X percent in 5 years. But what they fail to do or see or appreciate is what's going to take. Is it even possible to move it in the amount that I'm saying I need to move it? What does that mean for my customers? What does that mean for my bottom line? And what do I need to do to actually impact that? So what we do is we help clients understand what the pain points are, where they are, where the points of delight are, and to address the areas that they need to improve upon and to tout the areas that they're doing really well and keep that differentiation, but to be taking care of their customers while they're taking care of their business. And we make action plans based on return on investment. So we look at what are your drivers of overall experience? Where do you perform on those? And where do we need to put some focus? And then we connect it to their revenue so that they can see, if I were to action on cashier friendliness, for example, in a grocery store setting, if that was an issue for our business, if we were to improve our scores by 5%, that we can take through to say, what does that improve our overall rating of customers' complete experience with our brand, and then what does that translate to in new revenue for us? Our models go the reverse as well, so you can see if we weren't able to do this in time, over time, our NPS, our overall SAT, whatever our KPI is going to erode, and that erosion will lose us in revenue by X amount of dollars. So we have a tool that allows our clients to play with that and really then collaborate with us to say, you know, it's not very expensive to design a customer cashier friendliness type initiative that we can go and train our cashiers on. But it may be really difficult if everybody wants to do self-checkout and we only have one register. So that is a bigger investment that's a lot more involved. What's the return on the investment for each of those initiatives? And then we help them figure that out and decide which one they action on first or ever, depending on what the expected return would be.
That's huge. Yep. No, that's huge. It's one of the biggest parts of any growing, scaling business to take the time to understand exactly what the major areas of sentiment are, whether it's good, whether it's bad, or whether it's ugly. But then most importantly, actually doing something with it and closing that loop or following up on that loop and making sure that whether it's your customers or your employees, they're being heard. So Nicole, this has been absolutely awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with the CX Nation. It's been our pleasure.
Thank you, Adrian. And my pleasure as well. Always great talking to you.
Thanks, Nicole.
Great. Have a good day.
Hey folks, this is Adrian, your host of the CX Chronicles podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in to amazing customer-focused business leaders each and every week. I wanted to take a minute to talk about a couple brand new product and service offerings at CXC. Number one, customer scorecards. Have you had a minute to take a look at our CX scorecards and understand how you're doing across team, tools, process, and feedback? Number two, customer feedback reporting. A number of different companies are looking for ways to get better customer feedback reporting. Reach out to CXE today if you need help setting up your NPS, CSAT, product SAT, or customer effort scoring. Number three, customer experience coaching. Take the time to become a customer-focused business leader. We've done some amazing work with a number of awesome CXers out there. Reach out to us today at CXE to learn how you can get your customer-focused business leader playbook for success. Check us out at cxchronicles.com. Thank you for listening to another episode of the CX Chronicles podcast. We're thrilled to have you as a part of the CX Nation, tuning into customer-focused business leaders from across the world. Be sure to check out the CXC website, and as always, find us on any of your favorite podcast players, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and more. Thanks so much for making this show a reality and being a part of the CX Nation. And as always, folks, remember to make happiness a habit.